Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is April 17th, 2014. Tremendous amount of topics to cover tonight. And first of all, this topic of a red moon was very interesting this past week. It hit the major news media, so everybody has heard about this. So I want to do a little historical review of past red moons. Now, of course, it's a conditioned location of the moon and the fact that it is also an eclipse that's occurring, and partially the fact that many people were not in the path of the total full eclipse, but they were in a partial eclipse, and also the position of the moon gave it this image of being big and red. So hopefully many of you saw this, or at least saw images on the television or on internet, etc. But let's go back to 1995. The CIA, who is the police force of the World Bank, realized that a topic was going to break into the public domain. And it's something that I had worked on since way back. When I was at Cornell, 1979, I was writing papers describing the fact that large extrasolar system type of planets could come into the solar system, and with my theoretical work on comets, I explained that the nucleus would be able to build up matter, become larger, and even therefore small objects coming into the solar system would build up matter and could become larger and grow by the cometary process, the discharge of the solar capacitor. And if you're new to this, you have to read my books. The Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book was a book that came out in around the year, maybe 2001, I believe, but dealing with this topic for the general public. But in 1979, I was presenting this material directly to the astronomical community when I was at Cornell University, and obviously they didn't like it very much. But the point was that large objects would come into the solar system and could do damage to the other planets, thusly confirming Immanuel Velikovsky's work regarding Venus coming through the solar system, Venus as a large comet. And remember that when you look up in the sky, you're not going to see a big red ball. You're going to see a comet, a big, raging, out-of-control comet, not the little puffball, not the little floofy white-tailed comets that we see, we've seen today. These would be raging comets with seven tails, as the ancients tell us, whipping around and lashing out with electric discharges to other planets. And you could see these discharges through interplanetary space, etc., also affecting Earth. Okay. So around 1995, and this was, I had been on the Art Bell Show, I'd been on, you know, my message was getting out there. They needed a method to quell this topic with the subject. So they got a hold of a woman who had worked in the programming industry out in California. And this is a whole other story. I've gone through this on other past shows. But at any rate, a lot of the disinformation agents that came along with this entire Planet X disinformation program came out of the programming and software industry of California, of Southern California, working for the government, because a lot of them already had clearances, very high-level security clearances. Okay, so at any rate, they found a woman who would become the crazy lady, and she would act, this was her act, Nancy Leader. And so anyway, they developed a plan, and eventually she, in around the year 2000, would start to develop somewhat of a cult following, be placed on all kinds of high-level radio shows around the world. And this is one of the other amazing things, is how somebody with a message like this could come out of the woodwork and get on all these high-level radio shows claiming that she talked to aliens and they were telling her about Planet X and the inevitable destruction of the world in May 15th, 2003. And, of course, this is back in the Y2K era when everybody thought that the computer systems would fall and crash and there would be the end of the world or whatever. But we're talking here the physical, and by the way, that Y2K was a complete misinformation campaign. But the whole issue of Planet X was to destroy the concept in the public mind of Planet X once and for all, so it never could grow from the tiny little seed, or from my work, which was preempted that by decades and decades. And my work was very real. It dealt with these objects, and it talked about the three levels of damage that could happen to planets: the physical, gravitational, and then also the electric and magnetic. Okay, so at any rate, they chose as the centerpiece of their misinformation campaign regarding Planet X was a red full moon that would occur on May 15, 2003. And when all of this misinformation was going on in the early 2000 era, I thought, well, gee, why would they pick that date? That's a kind of an interesting date. And she kept claiming that this big orange ball would rise in the sky and crash into Earth and everybody would die. It would be the end of the world. And so I thought, well, you know, that's an interesting date, but what's the deal about that? So to make a long story short, we get up close to that, and I had spent a lot of time personally on my radio show and as a guest on other radio shows just saying that this wouldn't happen. The government built up her crazy side of the story, crazy lady talks to aliens, Planet X, etc., and they also built up the government white hat, what I call the white hats, on the other side of the coin. They had their so-called astronomer representatives, and they had everybody else. And by the way, NASA was taking pictures for her, putting them, giving them to her, and she was putting them on her website, claiming that they had pictures of Planet X. We found out, because of the very nature of the pictures taken and of the things that you could see, objects out there that were not really visible with amateur astronomy telescopes, and also the fact that these were taken with a high aperture telescope, professional grade telescope, and with very little time, the amount of time and streaking of some of the background showed that the amount of time the aperture of the camera was open was very short, indicated that this was real professional grade astronomical equipment taking the pictures that she was putting on her webpage. And then I went in one day and I did something kind of by accident. I pulled up one of the files of the pictures they were presenting, and I erased it. I forget the process I went through, but then I pulled it up again because I wanted to look at something, and it came up with the NASA designation file that was used by NASA. And I was familiar with these because when at Cornell I'd seen tons and tons of NASA photographs from all of the spacecraft, etc., and they had made a little mistake. They had taken the photos from NASA, put them on her server, and then changed the name. So the original name of the file was still associated with that file in the server, and sometimes by mistake it would pull up the original file name along with the file, the pictures that she was presenting, the TIFF files. And so I saw that, and I thought, man, this is NASA is providing Nancy Leader with photos of this alleged Planet X thing. And so, okay, now we get up close to the date of May 15th, 2003, and the airwaves are going wild. She's on Coast to Coast AM. They got Phil Plate on there and trying to debunk her and say that no. And anyway, then the cult followings are in Japan on the West Coast in California. They're in this Wisconsin, going to meet up with her on this date when the world is going to end, and also in France. So what comes out? Phil Plait, the little ding-dong astronomer, well, he's really a blog operator, a guy who never made it as an astronomer, never had a real job as an astronomer. And so anyway, he's on Coast to Coast, and he comes out and he goes, he's talking about the red full moon that will be on there. And I'm thinking, that's it. That's it. And only back in 1995, when this whole crazy lady talks to Planet X, to aliens, Planet X thing started, who would be the only people on the planet who would know that on May 15th, 2003, there would be a red full moon? And it would be coming up over, first over Japan, and then over California, then the rest of the U.S. would see it, and then Europe. And so they had mass suicides planned following Nancy Leader's calling here. And this was going to be blown all over the newspapers worldwide. Crazy lady talks to aliens, Planet X supposedly going to kill the world, and all it is a red full moon. And then, you know, with the mass suicides, this would have taken that subject and buried it 200 feet deep so that nobody would ever, ever talk about it again. That was the plan. But 2 days before May 15th, 2003, it became known by a slip of the tongue of this little moron on the Coast to Coast show, the guest, saying that this was going to be a red full moon. And I thought, man, that's it. They knew about this all the time. The phony NASA photos, there were real photos taken of not Planet X, but some other star system that you could not see with a regular telescope, placing it on her webpage and doing all this support with all of the disinformation reports, etc. And I'm trying to be on radio shows telling people, hey, there's nothing to this. This May 15th, 2003, the world is not going to end. There's no Planet X. And if you do see Planet X, it's not going to look like a big orange ball. It's going to look like a big comet. So at any rate, I called NASA. When I found out, I said, wow, I have 2 days to bust this thing wide open. I called NASA directly. And I said, if you do not use your power of the press to disseminate information that this is a big orange ball, which is the full moon, a red full moon, just like the one we saw here a couple nights ago, I said, NASA, you will be responsible for any suicides that happen because you failed to inform the public. Do you know what happened? That whole thing washed out the side of the ship like... oh, like water overboard. That, it didn't happen, it went away, and you didn't hear another word about it. So, just a little bit of a story there about the red moon and the way it was once used. And, by the way, after that, as other people came on and tried to be Planet X experts, we had like a whole laundry list of people that all of a sudden were Planet X experts. They inevitably, on the cover of those books, and these were people that came out of the misinformation groups, inevitably on the cover of their book would be a big orange ball, because that's what they want you to remember and think, that Planet X is some kind of big Jupiter-looking planet that's going to be up in the sky. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And the real situation is that it will look like a vast comet. The people in the know all about this. When Hale-Bopp was first discovered, and it was a comet, the Vatican, and we know this through Father Malachi Martin back in the 90s, who was working in the Vatican at the time in some of the underground facilities that they had there, he recognized that, and he said that the question that the Vatican had, they built an observatory in Arizona simply to study Hale-Bopp. And I knew some of the astronomers from the University of Minnesota who worked there, who were strictly comet scientists. They built an observatory not to view anything else but just comets. The Vatican's question was, is Hale-Bopp wormwood? In other words, is it Planet X? And this goes back now. The Jesuits control the world banks. The Jesuits, who are the base control entity in the Vatican who sits on that vast amount of gold that came over in the from the New World, that was literally stolen from the New World, filling ships full of gold. And that is the wealth that still is basis for the entire world power structure, starting in the Vatican through the Bank of England and the Bank of London, the Bank of Royal Bank of Canada, the U.S. All of the money from the gold from the U.S. Treasury, of course, has been stolen, and these have been placed in depositories around the world. And by the way, I have a couple videos on my webpage that you have to see. One is dealing with the Bundy issue, the ranch out in Nevada, where they tried to Harry Reid and his minions out there, the Sheriff Gillespie, tried to get the militiamen to waste away about 20 of the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, hired soldiers out there, tried to get the militia, trick them into gunning these guys down so that it would go ballistic. This is just the amount of maneuvering being done by these people is incredible. But Harry Reid is nothing but a giant piece of donkey dung. And that's, I'm here to hate to talk like this on the radio, but that guy is one of the most evil, corrupt, distorted people on the planet. This guy is, and you watch this video and start to investigate who Harry Reid is, senator from majority leader in the in Congress for the state of Nevada, senator from Nevada, and this guy has got corruption stamped all over him. And the whole laundry list, Harry Reid just appointed the head of the BLM and was instrumental also in getting Gillespie, the sheriff, installed out there in this county in Las Vegas. Wow. When you see the string of these people are busy, folks. These people are master manipulators, and they are very busy. Harry Reid had a $5 billion contract set up to set an energy system out in Nevada. And it was crucial to that was getting the Bundys off of their ranch. Okay, that's a whole story. I know there's other people covering that story, so I'm not going to talk a lot about it. I started talking about the red full moon, but I have many topics to cover tonight. Just a quick summary. I mentioned the one video I have linked on the top of my webpage. It's from a woman, Karen Hudes, who was 20 years with the World Bank and got up to chief counsel, position of chief counsel in the World Bank. Finally started to dawn on her what was going on in the World Bank, and she started asking too many questions and was fired. Now she's going public with what she knows, and obviously she was in the banking industry for all of that time. So any of these people you have to take with a serious grain of salt, but she is exposing, and she's talking about the train of power beginning with the Jesuits in the Vatican. Who are the Jesuits? The Jesuits were the Jewish leaders in Spain during the Inquisition that had to convert to Catholicism, because if they didn't, they'd get their eyes gouged out. And so anyway, they formed an underground secret society, continued on, and eventually gained control of the Catholic Church. During that time also was when the tremendous amount of wealth came over from the New World in the form of gold that was stolen from the Incas, and primarily the Incas and from Mexico, from some other countries also, but primarily those two centers, enough to fill hundreds and hundreds of big ships using it as ballast. So we're talking about the amount of gold that nobody can even fathom. And this became the power wealth basis for the, a lot of people think of the Rothschilds as the head of the banking. No, the Rothschilds were just kind of the gatekeepers of the money. The real bulk of that money came through Spain, through England, and was controlled, by the way, as the Vatican, remember, approved marriages, approved of wars, Ted told people when they could and could not have wars. It was instrumental in the Russian Revolution when the Bolsheviks won. It was instrumental in building up the 1913 takeover of the United States through the banking system, through the Federal Reserve. Now they are in China. Putin is resisting this. This is all a very complex story that you have to understand. But go back to Harry Reid. He's just a little greedy pinwheel, and they depend on lots of greedy people to run their operation worldwide. But at any rate, Karen Hudes, there's a video linked on my page, top of my page. You have to see this. She talks about the Jesuit power structure. You have to understand this to understand what's going on in the world. What does that have to do with science? They own science. They own all of science. They're the ones that promote NASA and the garbage science, the tier two science that they pawn off on you, the public. And that's one reason they don't especially appreciate me, is because not only am I exposing the bad science, I'm replacing it with real science, and I'm exposing the power structure that owns that bad science, and they also own the real top-level Tier 1 science that is used to keep the public under their thumb. They use that science to exploit the resources of the world, and believe me, they are in outer space with programs that are run through the U.S. Navy, the U.S. military, the top-level military programs. Okay, just a couple of product updates here. The pre-filter, when I invented this deal before, before really there seemed to be a necessity, it really came from the 2008 floods in Iowa, where we were in the field with water filters, and what was very clear in a flood or emergency situation, the water filtration units, the candles, the actual filter elements, and the filters themselves would become filled with crud, etc., very quickly. And of course, they're cleanable. You could take a rag, clean them out, brush off the filter candle, and reuse it. But it was really like, wow, you need to get this stuff out of there before your water goes into your filter, your gravity water filter. So thus the brain child, or the mother of necessity for the pre-filter. And then I thought, well, you know, you have, what are all the types of pollution you can have? You can have chemicals, you can have radiation, you can have oil, because in a lot of flooding situation there is oil, because oil tanks have ruptured, automobiles are giving off oil. There's just oil is kind of every place, or gasoline, so you got to get this out of your water before it goes into your water filter, your clean gravity water filtration unit. So started putting the whole product together. The powders that come with it are chemical, are food and medical grade powders that come with it, and then also accessory sets, so you could buy more of the powders. The powders are disposable, so when they become contaminated with the gunk, whatever the gunk is in your water, you throw that out, you put new powder in, and that prevents the really badly polluted water from getting into your water filter. Now you have relatively clean water going into your gravity feed water filter, and then the filtration, the filters in there do their job and get out the bacteria, get out the very small particulate matter, the really fine small particulate matter, and do a final filter on your water. So the pre-filter was a concept that grew out of the fact that there, since the year of 1998, when gravitational water filters really became popular, of course they were invented back in the Middle Ages by the Daltons, who had the royal stamp of England on their product for creating the ceramic water filters that were used and cured the plague problem in England through the Middle Ages. That's how far back these go. They realized that the Daltons were making yard figures out of ceramics, And for some reason, they noticed that the water that filtered through the ceramic animal figures was clean. You could drink it and not get sick. So they started building water filters, ceramic water filters, and eventually it grew to the very high production systems today, the ones that I sell in my webpage. But the point is that the whole issue of the pre-filter, the idea is to get the crud out of the water before it goes into your nice clean filter. The situation is that we are being somewhat inundated with orders for this pre-filter. It's a very unique item. It fits onto any existing water filter that's out there on the market or has been sold over the past 12 years. So there's tons of these out there, of the water filters, and each one of them needs a pre-filter in case of emergency. You really, really need this. And so lots of people use it if they have a lot of chemical in their well water, for example, or just to have around for emergency, whatever. But anyway, the point is, people are waking up, and now with the Fukushima radiation, which is going to start contaminating water on a continual basis, it's going to be growing. That's another thing that the pre-filter takes out. Don't be fooled. If there's a filter, before you buy a filter system, you're going to put a lot of money into this, make sure you research this. If it has a tube or an electrical connection, it is not for emergency, because if the city water goes out, if you have an under-sink water filtration system, I sell a countertop water filtration system, that is not for emergency. That's only for continuous water supply. The thing about the pre-filter is it will grab on to the radiation and filter it out of there. So that's, and then you throw that powder away and you renew it, and you're keeping the radiation from contaminating your water filter system. Inline water filter systems will not function well for radiation, because radiation will break free and it'll flow through your high pressure system and get into your water anyway. So there's really no good method of filtering out radiation in a high pressure, like under sink type of system. Okay, enough of that, but the point is that we're hitting capacity and what we can sell on the radiation or on the pre-filter. So if you're interested in this, I would suggest ordering it. We don't have an issue with supply, we just have an issue with how much we can stock and sell, and we're still keeping up. So if you're interested in that, make sure you get to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and order your pre-filter. I'm not going to spend too much of this show talking about that, but all the information is on the webpage. Also, I'm coming out with a new line of travel water filters, and this is something that's extremely important. You can travel with any of the water filters that I sell now, but something that's specifically designed for travel, for travelers, where you got one person, two or three people. The mini that I sell, right now we have basically sold out of that. It's no longer available. The little filtration mini, the little stainless steel mini, we are literally sold out of that. And so I'm coming up with another small line or line of small filters that are specifically designed for travel. So make sure you go to the webpage soon to see that. Also, I'm in the process of picking up a series of health products, and this is spurred by my own interest in finding a toothpaste that was non-fluoride, that was healthy, and was designed to actually clean your teeth and freshen your breath, etc. And I found that led me to a whole another series of products that are essential to everyday health. And so anyway, watch for that soon, more announcements. That's coming very soon online. And it's something I feel personal about. I don't sell anything that I don't personally feel very attached to. So keep an eye out for that. Just a quick update on the Bundy Ranch out in Nevada. This issue, I'm sure, is going to return. It goes back and forth, but the Bureau of Land Management, under the direction of the appointee of Harry Reid, I don't think they're going to take a back seat to being beaten down the first time. And you have to look at the video on my page, which shows how they tried to set up the militia out there to massacre a number of pawn BLM agents so that they could basically try and do away with the militia. The militia, very astute, and caught on to this before it happened. And look at the video on my page, and especially pay attention to the part about the geese, a sign from God, and that's all you can say. Something very amazing is going on here. But also, the United States is under siege from basically the world controllers. This is an incredible story, but it's being covered by many other stations, so I won't say any more than please check into this and follow the real history. I know Republic Broadcasting is doing a good job on their webpage updating with the information. John Moore has been covering it on his show. I'm not going to cover it on my show just because there is a lot of coverage, and also be aware of a lot of false coverage of this that doesn't report the real story. Just a quick update. I ran into a couple young kids who were trying to promote a business they started, and I said, I just was so impressed, I said, I'm going to give you a little spot free on my radio show. I don't have advertising. But they decided to start a juice company with a short-term lifetime on the juice, no preservatives, no additives of any kind, just putting juice, high-quality juice, in bottles, and then selling it and having the cycle of being able to distribute this very short to accommodate the short shelf life. And, of course, mostly everything today for marketing purposes has preservatives. Anyway, I just wanted to give them a little boost here. It's called OneNaturalJuice.com. And like I say, a couple young guys got a great idea. And what a concept, putting just regular good product into a bottle and selling it and to the public. No preservatives, no chemicals. Anyway, for what that's worth, it's something whose time has come. And I talk on this show a lot about going into a grocery store. You go into a grocery store and you can't find food. You cannot find food in a grocery store. It all looks nice, lots of packaging, but if you look at what goes into that package and the history of what goes into that, the products, the grains, the fruits, the vegetables, the meats or whatever, and you look at who the big companies, the GMO, the chemicals, the pesticides, the herbicides, the antibiotics that go into the meat, the raising of these in small contained confined areas, and the antibiotics and pesticides and antifungicides and everything that have to be sprayed on these animals and products just to get them there. For strictly marketing purposes, you cannot find food, real food, in a grocery store. So anyway, that's something I feel strongly about. Just a quick update on my book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. Now, this past week, the Heartbleed Bug is exactly what my book had been talking about. Now, the Heartbleed Bug is a corruption in the in databases called OpenSSL, which is basically a protection for websites that do commercials. So when you go to a website and it goes HTTPS, that indicates a secure website. Some of the sites, not mine, not any of the sites that I use for my processing of orders, etc., none of them are susceptible to this, and I made very sure of that. They use a completely different type of encryption and security, but those sites, around 500,000 of them around the United States, estimated, I think there were many more, have been compromised for a number of years, where the NSA is basically mining information out of these databases, and of course the hackers have had a field day getting into these databases the same way. But that is all of this. This is exactly what my latest book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, that's what it's all about. And now these same companies, what's happening? The companies that are selling these products, two groups are very opposed to you finding out about the real situation with RSA codes. These are the prime number-based encryption codes that are used for transmission of data and also for firewalls. And if it were found out by you, the public, and this is my goal in the book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, one of my goals is to expose the fact that these systems have been broken for years and years. But if you found out, the public found out and demanded a better system, then the NSA would have to retool. Trying to get into your back doors is now fun and easy for them, because all of, for example, Microsoft, all of your so-called protection is based on these codes. And that's where Bill Gates sold out to the NSA and the federal government a number of years ago, which got him international fame and wealth status, and to be buddy-buddy with all of the big high rollers in the banking world, got him the ability to buy into his own South American large-scale telescope facility that was almost built with public money. And then Billy came in and put the frosting on the cake with some of his money and got his own very own professional-grade telescope facility down in South America. Isn't that sweet? But at any rate, the whole issue here is that if you, the public, became aware, which I'm trying to make you aware in a wide scale, if you became aware that these encryption systems that supposedly protect secure web internet transactions, that these systems are broken, the companies that put out these would have to retool and do something intelligent, and it would cost them money. What they're doing now is just putting out new public keys, the numbers which have two prime numbers as factors, which are used as the basis of this encryption system. They are just putting out new keys. Well, I got news for you, people. Those can be broken in minutes. They can be broken faster than they can generate them. Okay, so the NSA would have to retool, and if you had real encryption systems on your computers, the NSA would not be able to get in there either. So there's two major power groups in that industry who don't want you to know about this and don't want a change to come along in that area of secure computing. The companies that sell this form of public key encryption are simply putting out new forms of encryption, and then also putting a band-aid on it, which they call perfect forward security, which is a shorter lifespan, simply a shorter lifespan, replacing the public keys, the larger number that is the product of two similar prime numbers, that similarly sized prime numbers. But my book shows you how easy it is to break these systems. And so real hackers and the NSA can be in there in a minute, breaking those systems. But as I said, the important part here is to understand that two major power players in this industry, the companies that provide it and the NSA, do not want you to find out about this, because then you would demand real security for your computers, and they would all have to retool. The NSA would not be able to get in easily into your computer, etc. So that's a huge story. You can find out about this in my latest book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. And by the way, you get that book free along with my second most recent book, Water, which talks about water control in the world, who's buying the water rights, who's not buying them, who's taking them by legislation, and manipulation around with the governments of the world. But the water book is very important to understand who controls water, just like oil. It goes all the way up the chain to the Jesuits, who control the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and the other people who control our Federal Reserve in the United States. And you find the evil list of basically corrupt people going all the way up there. Remember, they need a lot of greedy people to run their operation in the world. I'm just going to spend a minute on this story. NASA is beginning to put feelers out to admit that they faked the footage of the moon landings back in the 1970s. And not only would they have faked the footage, they would have had to fake Neil Armstrong saying, one step for mankind, one giant step, that thing, they would have had to fake that. So Neil Armstrong and the ABC astronauts, the alleged first astronauts around the moon and landing on the moon, they would have had to been complicit with that, to fake that before they ever supposedly got in that Saturn V rocket that day back in 1969 and supposedly went to moon. But now what NASA is trying to pawn off on you is that, well, they faked all the photos and all the video footage, and Stanley Kubrick did all of the footage, the video footage, but they did really go to the moon. Now, boys and girls, would you believe somebody who's produced the biggest lie in the last half decade, a professional government agency that supposedly has stood on its laurels and insisted that everybody believe them, begins to admit that, yes, they faked it, but you're now supposed to believe that, yeah, they really did go, and even though they faked all of the footage and everything they presented to you was fake, but they really did go. Where's the evidence for that? Oh, my goodness. These people, you know, there's nothing like a con man. I once knew a guy who worked in the prison system as a warden, and he had an expression. He said that the con man only cons himself. And that's an interesting thing, because NASA is now conning themselves into believing that they can say this and everybody out there is going to believe them. The basic issue is, would you believe a self-proclaimed pathological liar? This just in from a listener. It says, "Dear Mr. McCanny, I apologize for writing in this manner, but I'm not very computer literate. My question is as follows. Is the material spiraling around a galaxy spewing out from the center as a cyclonic storm on Earth, or is the material being pulled inwards toward the center as with a comet? I always enjoy your radio show. I listen Friday night with the Pastor Peter's network on WTWW. Okay, so anyway, this listener is asking about galactic formation. One of my very first peer-reviewed published papers in the astrophysics journals when I was at Cornell dealt with galactic formation, because I realized that that was the core issue. It's starting to understand how comets work, how the sun works, how solar systems work, and how fusion-based stars work, because the galactic nucleus, although it has much higher energy processes at work, is basically a giant fusion engine. And so basically what's happening, let me talk about my paper in terms of just kind of motioning, hand motion, etc. Take the galactic nucleus and imagine that it's a tennis ball out in front of your face, about at arm's length out in front of your face. Now take your arms and basically imagine large dust clouds that are moving around this galactic nucleus, and they're typically moving by or whatever, but they start to fall into the galactic nucleus. As they start to spiral in and lose energy, they start to fall in, and eventually, as they collide, etc., and heat up, that energy of formation of chemicals, etc., falling into the galactic nucleus starts to rotate faster and faster. This is just celestial mechanics. As this material gets closer to the nucleus, it becomes basically a fluid flow problem. And it comes in and it starts, as more material falls in, it creates pressure. It's like your hands around a grapefruit coming in and creating pressure on all sides of that cloud as it falls in. And so what's going to happen is, down deep inside where the pressure is greatest, it's going to try and force, this is just the same principle as an artesian well, it's going to force some of that fluid material out. And this is very easy to understand in terms of fluid dynamics. It's going to find one path out one side and diametrically opposed on the other side will be another path. If there were more than one pass, then there would be a great increase in the viscosity, reverse pressure, viscosity pressure on these arms. And so it tends to flow out in two arms, not three or four or five. Although you can find some galaxies with a couple arms where there was obviously a break in the pressure, the flow coming inwards. Now you have two arms of fluid flow coming out from the galactic nucleus, just like a lawn sprinkler where you see that the type that goes around and it throws the water out and it looks kind of like a spiral pattern. That's what's happening in the galaxy, although the difference is you have a tremendously massive galactic nucleus at the center. So this material is thrown out as it solidifies and cools. It becomes the initial hot stars. They're thrown out in elliptical orbits, and eventually they will fall back into the nucleus billions of years later. Earth and our sun is on the very outreaches of the solar system, so we are at about the farthest reach in our orbit when we're going to go around, and certainly not in any lifetime of anybody you know or any of your generations. But basically, we are moving in the far distances of the galaxy. So we are, we're also discharging the galactic capacitor, which gives the sun, I talked about this last week, that gives the sun a very comet-like property, where it's drawing in hydrogen, deuterium, helium into that fusion engine, and which continually provides it with the fuel, the fusion fuel for the ongoing fusion engine that drives our star up in the atmosphere. It's not at the core. So anyway, a very good question from that listener, and I like when people ask questions like that because it brings in a lot of detail, a lot of information that can be construed from a question like that. Just going back to the World Bank situation, many times on this program I talk about the CIA and the fact that they are involved in the world drug trafficking, very close ties with Mossad, and, of course, in the United States and through a lot of Latin America, historic involvement with the with hardcore drug cartels. And so at any rate, there was a very interesting posting that just came out where people have been trying, people who have been associated with these activities have been trying to expose it, but every time they go to the government or the police or whoever, it turns out that those agencies are deeply involved in it also, and the information gets scuttled. So you will see that on some other websites. I just want to mention that when I was in California back in the early 1980s, I got view of this also, where a lot of the people involved in the high-level transfer of military hardware between the United States and Russia were very much involved in this also. So, I mean, this is not fictitious. If you want to know more about this, read a book, which is actually getting harder to find. It's by Terry Reed. It's called Bush, Clinton, and the CIA. You want an eye-opener as to who is involved and how they were involved. That was back when Billy Clinton was governor of Arkansas, the MENA Arkansas operation by Clinton, where the CIA was running drugs from South America. But at any rate, just be aware of that, because when you start to see people like Harry Reid from Nevada, senator from Nevada, being involved in $5 billion solar energy contract in Nevada, trying to force people off their ranch so that they can make their money, you have to understand how deep this web of collusion and corruption goes and the level that these people will go to get their way. By the way, there's a lot of attention being given. There's a guy who's kind of a chubby guy. I've seen him on TV, on national news. And they're trying to promote the idea that somehow the Bible is projecting that in the next 3 years there will be some major change to mankind, and it's due to some alineation of the moon and the stars and that the so-called allegedly the Bible predicts this. I don't know why this is coming out right now. All I know is I've seen it. Why it's getting national news coverage on the smooth news, on the controlled news media, all I can tell you is that that's going to be a major vein of pushing misinformation, and I'll be, of course, watching that closely to see where it's going to go. But clearly they're trying to catch the people with a religious view of the world, to try and capture them and say, oh, that the world is going to have a major change here. And of course, this is diversionary tactics. It's just one of the many, many diversionary tactics to keep, and they go after certain elements of the population. And I'm sure there will be other pieces of misinformation that come out directed at other groups in the world, in this case, Western society. By the way, I'm seeing increasing number of people's emails being hacked and being used to distribute misinformation. I just want to make it clear, I do not have e-groups or email groups. I never have, I never will. And because I've always known that when the chips are down, when things hit the fan, that's one thing they will do. We'll try and take over e-groups or email accounts. So I do not ever have mass emailings, and I never would, because they're very easy to take over. The only information I put out is on my webpage, under completely 100% my control. On my radio show, this radio show, commercial free radio show every week, or when I'm a guest on radio shows that I have a long standing history of being on those shows. I don't go on just any radio show. And so those are the three places to find out information about me, and of course in my books and my writings and DVDs, CDs, etc. on the webpage, available on the webpage. And if you're new to this show, of course every week I have more and more listeners. My suggestion is, number one, you're going to spend a lot of time researching what I have done. My webpage alone has over 5 gigabytes of information. That includes radio shows that go back decades, and also the books and DVDs and CDs that are on the webpage. I suggest you can get these in e-format, you can get them in print format. The DVDs and CDs, of course, cannot be sent by electronics means, because they're just too big. But start to study, start to open up your eyes and understand. I had a very interesting incident about couple weeks ago. A listener was talking to her son about me, and the son happened to be in the news media in one of the major news centers in the United States. And so anyway, the son gets back to her and says, you better watch out for this guy. He's really dangerous. And she's going, well, wait a minute. First of all, he's not dangerous. But anyway, that was the guy's initial perception, because he went out on the internet, searched my name, and his perception from what he read was, of course, that I was a nutcase and that I could be possibly dangerous, and to warn his mother to not have anything to do with me and be very cautious. And so I told her, I said, good, that is his first step in learning who I really am. And that's why I could go out and I could have lawsuits and try and corral this and contain it. They would generate 10 times more misinformation about me. But that's a very important educational step in a person understanding and starting to learn what's going on. And this is a person who gives the news, supposedly is smart about what's going on in the world today, a newscaster. And typically, they have no clue at all what's really going on in the world. So that's the first step in their education. And so once they start, and here's what happens. There's one little piece of information that clicks someday, and it just doesn't quite make sense. And they go, well, gee, that's what Jim McKenney was talking about. So they start researching a little more, and then they find another piece, and then another piece, and then another piece. And they're going, whoa, wait a minute. This isn't what I was told at all. This is not how I thought at all. what's going on here? So they start digging deeper, and the deeper they dig, the more they find, and then all of a sudden one day, ding, the light goes on. And they go, oh my goodness, why are they presenting all this negative, just outrageously negative and incorrect information about Jim McCaney? Ding, that's step two in their learning process. Now they start reading my books. They start looking into what's going on, associating, and then this opens up the door to a whole new world of viewing things. Some people have a real crisis when they hit this. There are some people who cannot handle it. But the people who want to pursue that, have a real interest in finding what's going on in the world, start to dig deeper. And that's an education process. It doesn't happen overnight. But that first step of, first of all, realizing and reading and going, this guy's a nutcase. Holy cow, stay away from him. That's step one. So it's got to be there. And so that's why I let it be there, because it's a very important step. Because when they finally get to the point where they realize, look at the amount of effort that somebody is putting in to trying to negate what Jim McCaney is doing and saying, you start to realize that I'm on top of the target and I'm dropping bombs on it. And they're trying to do everything they can do to keep you, the public, from knowing what I am doing. By the way, I just want to mention this. On my new book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, I can make a phone call or send an email to many of the top radio shows in the country, and within minutes or days or whatever, I have an interview and I'm releasing my book and I'm talking about it on the air. Nobody, but nobody, will touch this baby with a 10-foot pole. Gee, what does that tell you? Once again, I've hit at the very core issue, one of the top major core issues on the planet today, on a topic that seems to be very esoteric and out of the minds of the average person on the street. That book is short. It's an easy read. It's written for the general public. It deals with one of the most complicated topics on the planet, something I worked in a good part of my career, is encryption and computer security. And that hits the nail on the head. And it opens up one of the biggest issues. It was published before the Heartbleed bug was announced, but it hits the nail right on the head. And by the way, you can get it free with any water filter purchase on my page, along with my book, Water. Those two you get free with any water filter purchase or accessory purchase of water filter items on my webpage. So make sure you go there. I'm out of time. I just can't believe this. I have pages of notes to continue talking about, but I will see you next week. This is Jim McCaney. This is my Science Hour. The webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Seven letters, JMCCSCI.com. And this is Jim McCaney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.